Okay. What is your name?
David Clausen.
And where do you live?
Northwest of Englewood, Kansas.
And what is your occupation?
I'm a farmer and rancher.
Okay. And how old are you?
53.
Okay. So when did you first become aware of the Starbuck fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire of March 6th?
It was a little afternoon. Todd Kleckler is one of the guys that helps me on our ranch. He's on the fire department, and on his way down to the fire, he's on the Englewood Fire Department, and on his way down to the fire, he called me, said it looks like it's headed directly toward our cattle there west of Englewood. So
where were you, and what was your first reaction?
I was in Plains, and I was eating lunch, actually, so I thought, well, I know the wind's big, but we've had fires before. That's the first thing you think of, and we've always been able to handle them, you know. But the wind kind of puts you a little more on edge, so I headed down toward the cattle, and we had another guy that was headed down there, too, to see if we could get them pulled out.
So did you have to move cattle, then? Were you able to successfully move them?
By the time I got there, the fire was getting there to the cattle. And Juan was our another cowboy that was already there. He was calling the cattle back up out of the tamarack. The fire trucks of Englewood actually drove along the south end of this pasture with their sirens running. And we call our cattle to sirens. So it pulled all of them across the creek to the south end of the pasture. And then that fire was coming directly up that crooked creek is what when it was coming up. And we were able to get all but about 40 out of there. And we got them up to Wheat about a mile north.
So did you evacuate your house? Or
nope.
What did you do when the fire came to your property?
Well, from... that property, it's over in Meade County, is where we had some of our cattle, and it looked like it was headed directly toward my house. So first we had another set of cattle that we had in between those in Meade County and my house, so we were thinking about those. There was no one at my house. My wife was over at our family office, so I was okay with not needing to get anyone out. So I went around to get Todd's pickup, which was at the fire department, to get those cattle to follow me. By the time I got back toward those cattle, I couldn't get to them because the fire had already come across. And I tried to go through a pure black area on the road, and I went about a quarter mile, and I could look down and see I was still on the road. But then you think, well, how stupid am I? Someone else is going to be coming right at me. I knew there was a wheat field right there on the side of me that I could get to. So I pulled out in the wheat field, saw the rows, followed the rows until I got out of smoke and went back up toward the house. And in the meantime, Juan had got those other cattle moved, and he had moved over to these others, and he had got them pulled out, and he was moving them north right ahead of that fire. The head of it was south of us, so it was a side fire that they wasn't having to keep.
So did you see more than smoke? Did you actually see flames?
While I was in the black, no. I mean, it was like dark. It was...
Couldn't see anything?
No, it was dark. You could feel the heat, you know, because there was CRP and a lot of grass on the south side, and this wind was blowing from the southwest, so it was blowing across, but...
You could tell it was moving pretty fast?
Oh, unbelievable. You know, I couldn't believe how quick it got there. So then I turned around and I went back home. Then you start doing what you can to try to save the farmstead because you know it's coming.
Yeah, so what type of things did you do to prepare for the fire?
Well, we had blades on the back of tractors, and me and another guy, we started just making fire breaks the best we could with those blades. And it's you look back and you see the speed that it was running, and those blades weren't doing nothing. But we thought we were doing something, and you're just reacting at that time because it's moving so fast.
You have some knowledge or experience with wildfires in the past, right?
Yes.
And how would you compare this fire to what you were used to?
There's no comparison. I mean, this one was so massive, and the speed that this thing moved, because there was so much fuel there, the fuel and the wind in combination with the low humidity, I never faced anything like that before, because it was making its own wind, and then it would shoot out, and it would just combust out in front of it. You could just see it, the heat of it. So it, the speed of it, and there was nothing you could do. We all understood, okay, we can't do anything about the fire, so let's see what we can do with structures. And that's what the fire department was doing.
So there were trucks at your fire trucks at your place, and
yeah.
Were they able to save some buildings for you?
Well, the fire was actually went to the south, and it looked like, okay, it might not come up to my house. So the fire trucks went down toward Inglewood, so that's where they were needed the most, and that's where they should have been. And then the side fires, as they would go out, they would get out far enough to catch wind, and then they would make their own head fire. So the main start of that fire was probably over close to Gardner's or further past by the time the big fire hit our location. And Inglewood was already covered up, so the fire trucks were all down there doing it. There was one fire truck that went around our house a couple times right before Greg Goodnight had come back to try to do that.
So. Did they foam your house?
Yes.
So, and your other structures?
No,
just
the house.
The house.
Yeah.
And how many times did the fire come across your property? How many times were there flames that actually came across? Just once?
Yeah.
Didn't come back again? And
no, I mean, we had the one big push. And I actually, about a quarter mile north of my house was the north edge. So we had that big push that come through. And then there was enough farmers around there that were able to get that side fire put out to keep it from building back up. So there was blades and discs and everything to knock that down.
Yeah. So about what time do you think the fire hit your property?
I think it was around 4 o'clock. So, you know, it was somewhere between 3 and 4. And I guess I could look back at some of my pictures because there's some time stamps on those.
You're probably pretty close.
Yeah.
Once the fire was past your location, did you go help fight fire other places, or did you try to?
We were still working on cleaning up because we were on the edge of that fire, so we were trying to just get as much shut down as we could, so if the wind did change, it wouldn't come back on that area there, and we couldn't get it all that night. I mean, we finally wore out. And
were you out most of the night?
I wasn't. My son was. I actually twisted my ankle bad enough that I had to go get an x-ray, and I wasn't any good to anyone. So,
did you feel the temperature drop?
What do you mean?
When you were out doing stuff, when the fire came through, when the wind shifted?
When the wind came out of the north, so that's what really kind of probably protected the fire from getting further north. That's what kind of stopped that line. Because I think it was between 4 and 5 is when that front come through. So we got the big wind out of the northwest instead of out of the southwest and west. And that kind of defined that edge, and we were able to get it knocked out. But yes, we felt the temperature change. So it was in the 80s. And the fire, you know, made it a lot hotter. But anyway, the temperature's in the 80s. And then that night it got cold from that north wind that showed up.
So then on Tuesday, did you have any fires visible around your property?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where we were able to start getting into those draws where we couldn't get the day before and the night before. And we had Fowler Fire Department, and there's a few from the Inglewood Fire Department up in that area that we were getting them put out and back burning and everything. And the night before on Monday night, one of those tractors that had a blade on it, I sent one of the guys over to Sand Creek to get that edge put out. And water table's about a foot down, and that tractor just fell straight through, and all four wheels, and he couldn't do nothing. And the grass was waist high or higher, you know, all the big grass. And so it was back burning, and it just gradually back burned in underneath that tractor. And it was going to take me 30, 45 minutes to get any tractor down there to pull him out, but it was too late. He was able to get out easy, but it took that tractor.
Yeah. I could see that. So, do you have any family history of wildfires, or know of how your ancestors felt about wildfires?
Terrified, you know. My grandfather grew up over around Sun City, and he moved his way down to Hardesty in Hooker, Oklahoma, you know, ranching, and they were always real worried about it. And I often think back why Grandpa kept his grass so short. He wanted to use it, and I think that there was something in the back of his mind from that all the time of having to deal with those wildfires. And it helped keep him mowed down.
So in that area over there, has there been lots of fires in the years that you've been out there?
Oh, you know, all of us over there are on the Englewood Fire Department. I just haven't been very active because I'm usually not there when the rings. But, yeah, there's always fires. We're always out when a lightning comes in, when it's dry grass, looking to see if anything's going to take off. And we're always...
So do you keep a spray rig at your... property?
No, but we have one now. And we've actually planned to do some controlled burns and try to control some of our red cedars that are really starting to come in. And we had planned that. So we had purchased this truck. We hadn't received it yet because we're going to try to see if we can help the grass that way. But we weren't expecting anything like this coming in.
Did this take care of some of those red cedars for you? Or?
Yes, it did. But the areas that it's the worst, they were right north of it. Mm-hmm. And I actually wanted to go start the fire and just back burn to get it taken care of, but it wasn't too politically right thing to do at that time.
I know there were a lot of back burns that were started just to help take care of stuff.
And that's an excellent tool for all of us to remember to use. You know,
it's becoming more common in this area to do control burns.
It will. It's not very common now, but there's some of us that we see that that's the only way we can get rid of some of these encroaching red cedars, especially. You know, you go over to Barber County and see how bad it gets, and if we don't get ahead of it, we're going to look like that.
Yeah. Okay. So did you have a lot of loss of animals?
I only lost about 40 cows. We hadn't started calving yet, and that was in that first part.
Yep.
Is where we lost all those. And we were just very blessed we were on the north end because, my neighbors, they got the brunt of it.
Did you find it necessary to shoot some of the animals?
Oh, yeah.
And what were some of the reasons that made it necessary?
Oh, these cows were blind, no ears, burnt udders. I mean, seared, and I don't know how they were still alive at the time, you know. So they would be at that extreme that would be very easy to decide to put down, all the way to some that, you know, you could tell they were in some tremendous heat. Ear tags would be a foot long, you know, underneath them, and you couldn't really tell if they were blind or not. They were either a little bit blind, udders were singed bad, you know, a lot of the hair gone, and you sit there and decide, well, their hoofs look fine, and they're moving around okay, what do you do? So there's a few of those. We waited a little bit, but we had to put most of those down eventually. There was one cow 30 days after the fire, so it was there into March, first part of April. She just showed up, and we had missed her all along. She was with the herd the whole time, and she was completely blind. The heat must have been internal because it finally worked its way to the outside, and she started just shedding skin. And that's how it really just started showing up. But we had missed her the whole time up until then, and all of a sudden... And I had to put her down. So that was the last one that I had to put down.
So did you find a lot of wildlife that was harmed by the fire?
Yeah, I mean, it was... There's no wildlife. I mean, the only blessing I'd say is we don't have skunks under our house. Yeah. You know, we haven't smelled the skunks since the fire around the house. But it was about a week after the fire. We went out to the horse barn. And Jeannie opened the door, and there was this raccoon, and he's just singed really bad, and he's just sitting there, you know, like, and you tell him a lot of pain. He just barely could move, and it's like he was showed up there just say, "Can you put me out of my misery?" You know, so it decimated the wildlife.
So how did you dispose of most of the cattle that you?
We dug holes. Out there in the pasture.
Did you have to document? Did somebody come help you document? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we had veterinarians and other people to help document. Yeah.
So what about pasture and fencing? Did you lose a lot of pasture?
Yeah, and it was mostly on the south end of our ranch got burned, and we lost a lot of that fence. And we're still we don't quite have all of our perimeters up. We're still working on that. But I'm going to change the interior fence. I haven't decided for sure how, but I'm going to change it from what it was.
So did you receive volunteer help?
Yeah, that was probably the highlight of the whole deal. And the blessings that we got back from this disaster is just, it's unbelievable. You know, they'd show up to take fence out, and just out of nowhere, they'd show up to build fence, do whatever, and with hay, it's overwhelming to us.
Did you receive some of the hay donations?
Yes. I even got some from the tip of the thumb of Michigan.
Ooh, yeah.
That's a long ways.
Yeah, it is. So did you have to go in to where they were collecting it, or did they bring it out to your ranch?
They brought it out to the ranch. So, and you know, there was so much hay that come in while the fires were still there. We in Inglewood put a bunch in town just so we didn't have places. But about a week, 10 days after the fire, we found two or three trucks that would deliver it. We got it all out of Inglewood and delivered it to all the ranches in the area that needed some.
So did you go, like, to Ashland where they had volunteers at the camp or places that people could eat? Did you go take, or in Inglewood where they had food, did you go take part in that?
Well, Holly Bass kind of headed up a lot of that volunteer help. And really, you think about the people of Ashland and what they did. They stepped up and, you know, the Christian camp and getting that going with all the volunteers, the organization and the orderliness of everything. It was pretty amazing, but it took all those volunteers to step up to make that available to the ranches to be able to get that help out there. And they would start calling us and say, I've got this many people. Do you need them? And can you use them? And we're just tickled to have them. And the relationships we've built from those people is really cool.
So mostly when they came out, did they tear down your fence? And,
yeah,
and did you have people rebuild too, or are you still...
We had nearly all the people that came out would take down fence. And that was easy, you know. You didn't have to oversee. You worry about the people that want to build fence. Well, we're tickled they want to do it, but, you know, how do they do? There was actually a group of 12 from Iowa, Southeast Iowa, that came out. And we put them, me and a neighbor, we had the half mile that we built out in the sandhills. So we put them on that because we wanted to see how they did, and they did a beautiful job. So I had a bunch of corners on a mile and a half already put up, and they put up all that fence in about 6 hours. I mean, they were so well organized, and the corners already there, and no mowing that needed done, and it was just like, they were like a machine just getting on them. So it's just tremendous.
So how long did they stay and help on your ranch?
Well, they did me about a day, and then they wanted to, and we want everyone to get passed around. We don't want to hog all the help, because those people are amazing. All of them are, really. It's just, you know, they come out and spend time out there in the soot.
So what's your most vivid memory of the fire?
I don't know. The massiveness of it is probably, and the speed of it is probably the most vivid. You just sit back and think about how fast that thing was moving and how big it was, because I sat there and I watched it coming across some CRP, and it is amazing. It's a miracle that no one was killed. You know, we just had that one trucker that turned us, but there were so many of us that did so many stupid things. You know, God's hand was on a lot of us. We didn't realize it until we look back and see how lucky we really are.
So what's your emotional response to the fire now? That, I mean, like at the time, do you remember how you felt and everything? Or?
I spoke about it here a week ago at Emporia, and I thought I was fine. But when we got to those cow pictures, that's still tough. You think about the pain they went through, and we're made to take care of those animals, and that's our job. You know, when we know they're going to be slaughtered for meat, that's what we want done. But us having to go and pick them out of their misery after we know what they had to go through and they're still alive. It's still tough. That's a tough one.
So, like you said, you found that one cow a long time after the rest of it. Did you have any, like, miracle cattle come out of the bush that got missed by the fire and wondered where they were?
Well, there's some that somehow got into the stock tanks. And, you know, their top were singed a little bit and their ear tags were, but somehow they were able to live through it. And those are the only ones that I saw that, I don't know if it's a miracle, but they were just lucky to be in it. Get in those stock tanks.
So what about, did you lose some stock tanks or windmills or solar windmill type stuff?
We really didn't. I think as around those tanks, it's beat down enough and, you know, there's not anything, big grass or anything. Even though there was a lot of heat, it wasn't enough to do anything to the tanks or the windmills. We were lucky there.
Did you lose any electricity at your house?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a ton of electric poles that were down.
So how long did it take you to get electricity back after that?
We were right at the start of that whole line that comes across from that 11-mile corner. So we were one of the first ones. But the ones south of us, that line goes south. Those guys took a lot longer. So
like a day or?
Yeah. I think we were about a day.
That's not too bad. So now you're also on the Kansas Livestock Association board, and they came in and did some help for the area too. Can you talk about what happened there and how that got started?
You know, Anderson Creek was last year over in Comanche and Barber County. So the people in the KLA office were aware of what people might want to do. So they immediately started getting calls from people within the state and across the nation wondering what they can do. So they organized hay donations, and they'd worked with Neil down at Ashland Feed and Seed to try to see where it needed to go. And so hay donations, fencing supplies, monetary supplies, and people. And they would organize with Holly and everyone at Ashland Feed and Seed. And then Ashland would work with Greg Goodnight on getting the hay into Englewood. But they took a lot of monetary donations, and then all the ranchers that were affected could apply for those. And I think it was a lot of fencing and cattle loss are the main criteria they used to disperse funds back so people could maybe start building their herds and get some fence built.
So have people been able to start purchasing cattle again?
I don't know if they have or not. I think they've got some funds to be able to start a little bit, but I don't know if they've actually bought. You know, we're all sitting there looking at how the grass came back, and it was great with the rain that came, but the heat that we got in June and July didn't allow it to really do a whole lot. We got cover, which we're tickled with, but there's not a lot there. We won't know till next spring as to what we really have. So I don't know if a lot of people have really, we haven't decided to add a lot. We're trying to figure out because that grass isn't ready to handle, but we have been put off.
And then also the interior fences that people haven't really got to yet.
Yeah.
Keeping it from. So has the KLA dispersed most of that money now?
Yeah, they did that, I don't know, it was the day before Ashton Feed and Seed's anniversary deal.
Yes.
Most people got it that Friday before that, so it's been well over a month ago. So people got that pretty quick. And there's like $2.7 million in that fund. And it didn't come just to this area. There was like six or seven other fires in the state that those people were. But we got the majority of it in this area. So it's a huge boost to this economy here.
So speaking of the different fires that were on that day, which kind of limited the amount of help that came in, were you did you get to see the strike teams that came in? Did you get to work with them?
Well, I got to visit with them, you know, and that was amazing itself, you know, because we got people from almost the Utah border in Colorado that come in and just talking, and those guys were just so happy to be here and help, and experienced firefighters, you know, that work those forest fires and coming out and relieving our guys, because our guys were just beat, you know. They went, a lot of them, two full days just without sleep going. And I think your husband was right in the middle of it.
That's my brother.
So, yeah. I mean, your brother. Yes. And so I sat there. I go, those guys were a gift from God, really. And they didn't charge us anything.
Yep. State pays.
Yeah. It's just...
Just good. So, did they talk about the difference in the way they fight fire and how we fight fire here?
I didn't get to talk to them about that. I mean, the crews from Inglewood and Ashland probably got to talk a little bit more about that, and that would have been interesting. But I didn't take the time that I should.
You're busy doing cattle.
Oh yeah, but you know, the more you go in life, the more you realize it's about relationships than it is about the rest of the stuff.
But yeah. So what people or agencies were instrumental in helping with this fire? I mean, who do you think were most helpful?
And I'm just telling you my experience. You know, I know Millie, and she had more to do with a lot of the other agencies and what was going on. But just from my experience, I know that first week after the fire, I was talking to the vets, and they were doing a lot of the putting animals down, and it was just tremendously draining on them. Get to the point where they're made to take care of animals, and here they are having to go out and just shoot these ones that they know are in pain, but you just get to the point you can't do it anymore. So there were some ranchers from outside the fire area that would come in and help them, but especially there was game wardens that come in from the state. The day the governor showed up, the Secretary of Ag came with him, Jackie McCloskey did. And that day, within an hour before I got there to talk to Jackie and the governor, I got a call from John Kellenberger, and he says, the game wardens just got pulled off. They said they had to go home. They couldn't help me anymore. And, you know, he was all of us were. So I immediately told Jackie what was going on. They got them turned around and coming back immediately. And it was something to do with the National Guard thinking they needed to do it instead of the game wardens. And, you know, you get into that bureaucratic crap going on. You can't get anything done. Well, they cut through it, and they got the help back right away. So I'm tremendously thankful for both Governor Brownback and Jackie to get that help turned around and addressed, because the relationships were already there with those people. That's, I want that one, and that one shot, and they turn around and let them take care of it while they looked at some others. And it took a lot of pressure off our local people that way.
And with them being familiar with the area or with
Correct.
What animals and stuff. Yeah. Can you perceive of anything positive that's resulted from this fire?
I guess that's all I see is blessings that I've seen, you know, from the hay that came in immediately, the fencing supplies, all the people. I mean, thousands of people come in here and just drop things. I had a lady that's a school teacher from Parsons, Kansas, and her husband's an engineer. They were going to go to Memphis on spring break, and they said, no, we're going to go out and help with this. And they just showed up, and they got out there in the sit and started rolling up fence instead of taking their spring break. So there's hundreds of stories like that, and I've heard a lot of them, you know, that people would just drop things to come help. So I guess for as devastating as it was, I think we've got more blessings out of it from those people and what they've done, and the people in this community and the state and the nation altogether. It's just, it's really overwhelming. You just, it's kind of hard to grasp the size of it.
So what do you think about the way the media treated the incidents of the fires in March, you know, and how social media really helped?
Social media was the only way it got out. I'll give you an example of the national media showing up. So John Kellenberger was over in Meade, and this is a week, 10 days after the fire. And it was one of those nasty, windy days, you know, where everything was moving. So he says, I got a news reporter with me, and he needs to go into the fire area, and he might like talk to a rancher along with me. And I says, okay, well, come on. Showed up, it was NBC Nightly News. So I thought, okay. So, you know, we were both a little nervous. You get national people in there, and I says, let's just be positive and say all these positive things going on and how we're going to handle it and everything. You know how much of that? And they sat there and they interviewed us. You know how much they showed? Zero.
Yeah.
Because we weren't negative. We had to be negative to get on there and to talk about, oh, how bad it is and how, well, we weren't going to be that way. So I just assumed not be on national media because that's all they want is the negative. We had a lot of help from all the help we really needed from the social media. And Trump actually, you know, he knew about what was going on, and he opened the CRP pretty quick to us to be able to get up, put on that where it didn't burn. And he did what he could there.
Yeah. So right now Montana has fires kind of like our fires. How does that kind of compare to what we went through?
I think it's the same, you know, and I'm actually working with Neil Kay, and a lot of us around here are actually got a load of hay going up there to those guys, and Stan Hazen's bringing it up there now. He picked it up in Nebraska and it's kind of going up there. So yeah. We're trying to pay forward best we can. You know, and we're trying to help in the Houston flooding and everything, yeah. and we don't have to be out front. We just like to do things and where we can and help out.
So, what's your thoughts about the agricultural community and how they respond to things that, like the fire, or like when you know you have to put cattle down and stuff?
You know, you run out of adjectives to talk about how great it is really what you do, because you just can't put it into words how good it is. But I have realized how pathetic I am, because you sit there and you see these other people that go through these trials and struggles, and I might say a prayer for them and send them a little money, but these people dropped what they were doing and just to come and to love on you any way they could. And just to help you heal. So it just tells me how much better I need to do, because that's amazing. These people are amazing.
Is that some part of the work ethic of the agriculture industry? Or
I don't know. It might be more morals. You know, we've got a heart for other people, you know. And there's definite work ethic with that. But I guess I haven't thought about it enough.
So, have you done things to prepare for a future fire like this, or any kind of a disaster?
We don't know how to prepare for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know the fire departments and the state and all of us were trying to talk, okay, do we need to put fire breaks up? But how big a fire break are you going to have to do to handle something like this? It'll be that to be a quarter mile long. You know, and then try to figure out a way to start back burning out ahead of that. And then how do you know what direction it's coming from? So you'll have the fire break going the wrong way, and where's it going to start? So you can prepare and do some of that, but that's not going to prevent all of them. It could help. But.
In the communities, did we do well on communications or on making sure everybody knew what everyone was doing throughout the fire, or was it just such a massive fire that weren't capable of doing a lot?
We weren't capable because it was so fast. You know, the fire trucks would find a house and do what they could to protect the houses, and that's what they should have done. And they did a great job. I think they were able to save about everyone they got to, the ones they didn't get to, the one that we lost. So. The communication between each other is just like Mike McCarty was on Greg Goodnight's disc right there by my house, trying to help disc a fire break along with our blades. He got lost down in there when the fire hit. He got lost down in the below the house, and none of us could see him. So you talk about communications. We love the phones. I was able to call him. Yeah, I'm okay. I can't see anything. It's hot, but I'm on disc ground. I'm okay. And then once it blew through, we could get him out. But the communication afterwards is probably the thing that I've liked the best. Because we sit there and we called each other. you know, when we'd see people on the road, we'd stop and visit a little bit, but we'd call, how are you doing? You know, we knew some of the people that were as devastated as anyone, losing them, and they maybe losing their livelihood, you know, so we'd just try to come alongside of them and call them and see. So it was a community development program, too. So there's another blessing that come out of it is as we're joined together to try to help each other out the best we can.
Did cell phones work better than radios?
Much. Well, because, you know, you carry your cell phone wherever. For me, I mean, when you're in the fire truck, between fire trucks, the radios are great. It's like, it's probably better, but for what we were doing.
So do you have any other thoughts about this experience that you'd like to share? What about your family? Where were they? And how did you communicate with them during the fire or after the fire? Because I'm sure all of your family doesn't live close.
Well, I had texted them a video of the fire probably around 2, and I says, it looks like it's going to miss us. You know, because the head of it was south of us and going. I says, I think we're going to be all right. Little did I know that another one was coming around. So Carl and Ann, they showed up right away to do what they could. And Carl was the one that kind of stayed up all through the night and made sure everything was going when my foot, I couldn't do anything. Before the fire hit the house, Denise Kleckler, and that's Todd's wife, that's taken a lot of the pictures there around the house, she asked me, says, what do you want to get out of the house? And, you know, you don't think about that until you're faced with something like that. And you don't know where to start. So I said, nothing. He says, there's no one in there, so let's just try to save it. And I was ready to just let it all go because there wasn't anyone in there. It's okay.
Yeah.
So I called Jeannie before that, and I says, I don't know. You better get down here if there's something you want to get out. After Denise asked me that, I started thinking, well, Jeannie better get here. So,
she might have a different...
She'd have a different opinion than me,
yes.
but not too much. She was just happy that no one was hurt.
So how frustrating was it to you that you messed up your ankle and couldn't do anything?
No, tremendously. You know, but what can you do about it?
Yeah.
I was pulling a hose around the west side of the house, and I stepped off a ledge, and I was on my face before I knew it. That's the way it goes.
So, did you have physical loss at your ranch, at your homestead?
There was it's either 60 or 80 by 200 Quonset that was built in the 1940s. It was all a cement floor, poured by hand. I don't know, it's 40 foot tall, huge hayloft. I mean, it was a landmark in that area that everyone knew about, you know, and the kids all grew up playing in hay and playing in that barn. When that fire come through, my brother was actually on a skid steer keeping the fire from getting to it on the base, and we thought we had it saved. We thought, okay, we're all right. Next thing he looked up, and embers had got up in the top, and there's so much wood, and it's old dry wood in there that it just combusted, and we lost that shape.
So how's it changed the landscape at your house? I mean,
oh, quite a bit, you know, because we're called the Grove Ranch is the name of it, because there's a 3/4 mile long row of trees running east of the house. It's all gone. You know, so we'll still call it the Grove Ranch, but it'd be
no
because of the history.
Are the trees still there, just burnt? Or,
yeah.
And how are they burnt? I mean, did they lose their bark? Or?
There's a bunch that the bark blew off immediately. There's some that are losing it now. But it was, the fire was so intense that it just killed the trees. I mean, it just, we had all those tumbleweeds from 11, 12, 13 that had got in there. So there was that whole mat of tumbleweeds in there that gave it that much more fuel, and all the dead wood that was there on the ground. And it was...
So are you surprised at what the fire did burn and what it didn't burn?
Very. You look overhead at our house, and right west of our house, there's a grove of elm trees. It didn't touch those trees. But it touched all the trees to the south, the whole tree row to the east. To the north, it got a lot of those trees, and it got the Quonset. But why didn't it get those elm trees? And if it did, that would have taken our house. So it's kind of like a tornado. You know, when a tornado goes through, you wonder, well, why didn't it do this or do that? Well, these natural disasters, you always just have questions.
So did you ever go east of Ashland after the fire?
Yeah, and it took a while because, you know, you want to get around. But the massiveness of it, from east and north and all around, it's...
When did you find out that there were actually two different fires that came together?
It's probably a week later. Before someone said there was another one up north, and then they just come together like that. So I actually got some video from the Weather Service showing that, if you'd like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. That's cool. But just so different in the magnitude of what all the fires were, and like you said, how many people were safe, even though crazy things happened.
Yeah. I mean, and you're probably getting to talk to all these people and, you know, some of the stupid things that we did. And you wonder, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Like, they didn't get hurt.
Yeah. So you got any other thoughts you'd like to share?
No. I mean, right now I'm just, you've got tremendous gratitude for all the help that's come in. And thankful for the rain that came the end of March, and we got ground cover, and everything's starting to hit. We got a new normal now, and that's just, we'll deal with it and move forward, and just thankful for neighbors that we got and the community we live in.
So thank you for sharing your experiences with us. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.